Good evening and welcome. You're listening to 42 Minutes from ThinkBook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting authors, thinkers, thinkers, and philosophers of our day, where we naturally discuss the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything. I am Douglas Bowles, and tonight we have something interesting in store for you.
As always. And of course, I'm Will Morgan, and this evening we will be speaking with John Cale, the Cosmic Gnostic host of the Cosmic Gnostic Radio podcast, which can be found at his website, cosmicgnostic.com. See, I told you there's going to be tongue twisters. Mr. Cale is the author of the recently published book, Mysterious Star Map Charleston, South Carolina, available from Oracle Media, as well as contributing a chapter to the Sync Book 2, which was called Synchrognostic and the Alchemical Other. This is our first time speaking with Mr. Cale, and I got one word, Archon.
that's where I want to go, too, but how are you doing tonight, and what do friends call you? What should we call you? Just John Cale?
Well, everyone calls, just call me John Cale. My name is John Cale, and people tend to call me John Cale, I guess.
And are you in the Velvet Underground?
No, I'm not, but when I lived out west, I got that all the time. But when I'm back here east, nobody's ever heard of John Cale, even my father, who's also John Cale.
Huh.
The Velvet something or other.
Yeah. Well, Will and I are both out west, and so that, I guess, figures in.
Well, I can't let you slip on the whole Archon thing. Let me see if I understand your position on this. There are certain forces at battle here. Is that a correct statement?
I wouldn't say it's really at a battle per se. It's just that I would say out of balance more so. And the way we are as human beings, we tend to put these words out there that have meaning, but can mean a lot of different things. I think language is an interesting thing in itself. But the term Archon has been associated, I guess, in the generic sense of Gnosticism or Gnostic, as being these beings that reside in the solar system, and they think they're gods, essentially, but they're not.
Okay.
And I don't know if I really want to, I don't know if you want to really get into the whole Gnostic story, but there is some element of that.
But now, how are these different than the...
Well, see, what's interesting
the
is
the idea
you...
of a demiurge.
Okay, what's...
Is it the same, or...
They're the same. The Archons is kind of like... the demiurge is kind of a result from the Archons. You have to like think that these things, if they exist, they're not organic. They're the opposite of organic. And if we're in a dualistic universe, then these things are out there because of consequences of what we could call experiments or whatnot, of what reality is made up of. And out of the consequence of creation, what was called the demiurge was created. And in some Gnostic texts, they describe the demiurge as believing that it is the creator of the universe, but it's not.
It's just a bratty child in a mud pit. Well, I've
you could say that.
Yeah, okay, all right. So I find it really cool because we dealt with Alexis on one of our shows who saw like the tree in her college. Is that right, Doug?
Yeah. And so that thought struck me, too, that it's interesting.
And,
so
of course,
wait,
because we also have Olympia. There's a double play. There's a double tap of Olympia here because of Andras Jones, who had something very similar. I mean, you have your star map in Charleston, which I have no doubt is there. But there's also the we've had multiple individuals who have experienced this, like the sudden realization that the very, you know, the environment that they're used to all of a sudden takes on this new meaning and new shape. But you specifically say there's influences who do this. You don't think that it was intentional.
Well, see,
well, not intentional by human means.
Well, sometimes it seems like it's intentional, but when I step back from it all, it seems just it seems like there's something else that perhaps has to use human beings for its own life, for whatever reason. It could be like a worm, for all we know, of energy that just knows that it has to go through men to create these things, so that when it's created, it harnesses the human, you know, energy to be in a specific places for specific reasons. And it always seems that, like, these places a lot of the times deal with the youth energy. So
you say youth as in young ones?
Yeah, youth.
Well, that would make sense. So you're saying they're like public parks that comprise the Starmack of Charleston?
Yeah, and they all, every single major park coincides with the star that would represent what's in Orion. Or I actually call it Osiris.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of, I don't know, it wasn't something that I was looking for.
Okay, it's so that's something interesting, because 17 is such a big number in your piece. It pops all over the place. You kept, you know, it seemed like that's the number of your initiation, 17. And I think 17...
Is that a true statement? Is that... That was in the piece? 17 came up in the piece?
Yeah.
That must have just, like, zoomed right by me. I didn't... What the fuck? Are you serious? I should have seen anything.
But 17, isn't that the Osiris number? Am I making stuff up now? Isn't it?
I think so. I think you're making something up.
Well, I don't know how to answer that, because honestly, like, it's kind of like been with me my entire life, and it's kind of like, you know, I'm 36 years old now, and I'm kind of one that likes to self-analyze, step back, and, you know, continuously try to do that. And from when I analyze myself, it seems like a lifetime of initiation, starting with my birth.
Sure, but your piece focuses, you start with this car crash.
Oh, when he was 17 years old.
Right, right.
Well, as far as synchronicity, yeah.
Was the book, was that Celestine Prophecy? Wasn't it?
It has to be.
It has to be.
You don't mention it. It's like, wait a minute. Is he going to show us what this gun does at the in the third act? But is it the Celestine Prophecy?
Yeah.
Bam!
I mean, I had ideas of, of, you know, basically questioning reality, like, long before that, but that event was solidifying for me, to where I was like, there's absolutely something behind this.
Well, tell us exactly, so walk us through the event. So you're sitting there, you're going to turn left, and you look both ways, and then?
You sound like a police.
Well, let me back up a little bit. A friend of mine had introduced me to the book, and, you know, we were just like philosophizing between each other, talking about synchronicity, and she was trying to tell me about synchronicity.
And this was earlier that day or earlier in the week sometime?
It was the day before.
Okay.
And so I was kind of obsessed about this idea, so I just started reading it.
Because it happens, because the whole situation happens in a very Celestine Prophecy type of scenario. Like, it's like exactly what it was trying to teach you is in when these big occasions of your life, pay attention to, like, and how people are generated and pulled around you and stuff. It's very potent.
Yeah.
That would be a very potent slap in the face, sync-wise.
But even in that moment, like, when I had a car wreck, do you want me to explain?
Sure.
Exactly?
But so you looked both ways, you didn't see any cars, and then...
Smash.
Yeah.
And then you hop out of your car, and you're, like, pissed off, and you're scared, and you don't know what just happened.
But the car behind you is the friend that gave you the book?
Yeah. She, like, it happens. I jump out of the car, and I'm just kind of like, whoa, you know, this what the hell happened here? And there's, like, some redneck coming running over to me, and like, he just hit me, and he's, like, pissed off at me. I can tell he's angry. And then I look right behind me, and she pulls up right behind me, and she's a... pizza delivery girl.
Like I got your back.
Anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, she's right there. She jumps out of the car and she's asking if I'm okay and if he's okay. And she kind of like takes control of the situation. And I mean, in my car,
well,
I had the book.
For her, that would have been a key note for like you're ready for the situation. She knew exactly what to do.
Yeah.
So for her, it was probably a big thing. Are you still in touch with this friend?
No, unfortunately not. But I wouldn't doubt for a second that she didn't have a sync moment as well.
I just want to...
I mean, we talked about it since then.
Well, see, I think that it wasn't probably the beginning of my experience with synchronicity, but it was a definite guideline. In my experience with synchronicity, was the Celestine Prophecy as well, but synchromysticism totally takes that and like ups the ante because you're no longer looking for your own personal syncs. And I know I noticed you used the comment of macro and micro syncs in your piece. We can talk about that in a second, but I mean, synchromysticism is like recorded sync in other people's lives, and then how it like mythologically presents itself in front of us. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm just trying to...
I mean, it's two different... It's like
a
different headspace, right? I mean, once 9/11 happened, there was like a whole new can of worms. Because you're like looking at you're looking at an event and seeing synchronicities. Before, it was the synchronicities that we were experiencing in a day to day.
You know what's interesting about that
too, though, prophecy,
is that at some point
like,
those
situation.
Two things are going to come together. That'll be the trip when you realize that the larger, so that your sync and the collective sync are actually in sync.
Well, that's the micro macro.
Yeah, it kind of ties in with the mythology around sort of the star map stuff. You know, it's pulling me in kind of thing. And it also makes me realize the connection of, like, even earlier in my life of things and events. But it's not just with me. It's not the realization of just me. It's the realization of the connectivity of everybody and how everything around us is connected, essentially.
Well, let me share how I felt connected beginning to read your piece yesterday. It starts with the 17, and yesterday was the 17th, and I've been thinking about the tarot cards as they relate to the culmination of a cycle, and everyone's focused on December 21st as the culmination of the cycle, and it's like, oh, the world card, you know, and so then I thought, well, let's just see how these days play out, you know, if each day is the next tarot card as we march toward the 21st, you know, the end of the cycle, the world card. But so I was reading... you know, it was the star card, and so that's hope, and I'm reading your piece. But the funny thing is, the 17th kept saying 17 again to me, and there's this connection with 17 again, and this is 40, because the actress Leslie Mann is in both of those films. And so it just felt like reading your piece yesterday connected me to our upcoming apocalypse, and so thank you.
You're so
because you connected, you know, you got me into sync with our moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leslie Mann.
I found that like a lot of this happens a lot, and like for me, the sync for me is this is the 18th that we've randomly been able to pull this together, and to me, like the number 9 is just completely throughout my life in so many ways that it's really creepy in some ways, but I like creepiness. And, you know, for me to do this now on the 18th, where, you know, 1 plus 8 equals 9, that's my sync in connecting with this. So that's pretty cool to me. Hmm. Like, I'll give you an example, like, my name. I should say that 9 and 11 is a lot in my life.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the book, how 11-11 has given itself up to 9-11 for you now.
Yeah. Well, the whole 11-11 thing, that's a whole conversation on its own. Like, that's something that just started happening to me where I was seeing it everywhere, and I was like, why is this happening?
Was it as big as the accident in your life then? The 11-11 thing was as big as a moment as the accident?
Or was the accident just like a really startling wink, like sync wink? Hey.
Yeah, it's very startling for me where I was pretty convinced that there's something behind this thing we're calling synchronicity and its connection with all of our lives and the universe. And 9-11, I mean, of course, you know, when I say that, everyone thinks of the date, you know, in New York, but, like, it goes further than that. And so I'm trying to make sense of this stuff as well, and I don't really understand it all, you know.
It seems like along. People have shown a preceding history, like 9/11 history, before 2001. That there, you know, it's a loaded day, no matter, you know, what year it is. I can't recall any of those instances offhand, but I seem to remember, you know, big moments. You know, that's worth a Google maybe. But so, and that brings me to something you wrote in your piece. You say synchronicity seems to be a tool of this other. You know, and so that you touch a darkness a little bit where, you know, sometimes the forces leading us might not be to our best interest. You know, this is, again, the Archon idea a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like there is a darkness that when this darkness is out of balance, in our universe, that it tends to want to prevent, I guess, us from becoming our own true potential. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, to be like an animal, that it needs to feed to survive itself, you know. But for whatever reason, it's there, and it uses us, and it seems that synchronicity, in a way, is a part of that mechanism that it uses, because it knows about the connective perspective of what we are with synchronicity, and has sort of veiled our eyes from understanding it. And it's kind of strange that, like, you know, humans have been on this planet for so long, and this topic of synchronicity, you know, it does seem like it's been touched upon if you go through the ancient texts. You know, it's been tried to be conveyed to humans, but for some reason it doesn't click with everybody. And
it's evolution, though. I agree with you when you mention the fact that it's like, because it's sort of like, because in my opinion, sync has to do with meaning and has to do with language. But in the same way that you can't have, you know, a steam engine be invented before the tire, It's like you can't have the understanding of sync early in man's history. It's almost like an evolution thing. And you made that point in your book, like, this is evolution. And I think that that point is also made within the Celestine prophecy. It's like we're on a I wouldn't say deadline, but things are building up. Synchronicity is part of evolution. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's becoming more apparent, and people seem to be noticing it more, you know? And so when we notice things, it becomes a part of our perspective. And so, well, I don't know about anybody else, but for me, I started applying it to my everyday life, in a sense. Observing my reality and, you know, trying to understand it all, like, internally and externally. And, you know, when I do that, it just seems like magic really starts to happen. And I become mystified by it all and wonder, you know. And so, and I think that's a part of evolution, is to, like, really keep pushing human consciousness to where we, I don't know, reach this, I don't know what the end result is, but it just feels natural to me. And, you know, a lot of the times I'm not really, like, specifically trying to look for a certain number or whatever. I just try to be clear-minded about everything and allow things to fall into place as it is. And, you know, like, when you start recognizing that synchronicity is real, it just becomes more and more apparent, and it happens more and more all the time. And I feel like it can be used in some kind of creative, imaginative way that we're not really quite tapping into quite yet.
Well, John, yeah, I'm glad you say that, man. I am so glad to hear someone say that.
But sometimes I conceive of reality kind of like characters in a story. So there's an author, and, you know, as we're all authors here, you know, as storytellers, sometimes we have an idea of what we're trying to do, but then the characters kind of do what they're going to do on their own. But, you know, as the bad demiurge trying to corral all these things into place, you know, we put our will on our creation. I wonder about the notion, you know, like you were saying, of archons and synchronicity. And so, you know,
well, I feel like why do I feel like
there's a grand design, say, you know,
it just seems like the
William Morgan role is one that maybe morally isn't going to be something you're too crazy about, but then the sink is really pulling you in some direction that you don't necessarily want to go.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm thinking about, like, synchronicity beyond good and evil, you know, so, and that speaks to some of the points you made in your piece about, you know, archons and synchronicity as a tool for the quote-unquote other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it feels like we're talking about three different things here. We're talking about archons, we're talking about other, and we're talking about synchronicity. Is that a true statement?
But it's the force that's guiding. That's the thing. It's like where...
But I don't understand. And like, is the Charleston thing the Charleston thing considered a product of the archon, or is that a product of sync?
Or is that a product of the?
Do you understand what I'm asking? Okay, mysterious star map of Charleston, South Carolina. Is this what the star map that you found in Charleston, a design of the archon? Or is it the design of how sync works? Or am I completely misunderstanding, like,
the
relationship of time here?
The book itself doesn't get into synchronicity. But I, like, in my own personal journeys, I feel like it is a part of synchronicity. And just trying to understand, like, how things work in our reality. I don't think anybody really quite understands it, And it seems like to me that, you know, these structures are all there, created, and I've studied Freemasonry. I mean, there could be conspiracy and all this behind it, but I don't think so. I feel like that, like, all these things were put there, not intentionally by these people, but something or other guided them to do so for some reason. And that to me seems to connect with these topics that we're talking about. Synchronicity just feels like a part of that mystery.
So then that's the question. Is there good sync and bad sync? Like, and these are like...
And are we getting into the realm of talking about omens at this point?
Right, like air quotes, you know? So if... Because you do speak about it like an evolutionary purpose behind a lot of this, too, in your piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's this whole idea of good and evil and light and darkness. It seems to be important to understand, and I don't think we understand it quite right. I think perspective, you know, has a lot to do with it. And, you know, to be honest, it's just kind of confusing in a sense to me. But I feel like there's a connection there.
I can hear you.
Yeah, maybe we're getting too heavy. We're like trying to...
I know.
teach us, please, teacher.
Everybody, take a deep breath.
Yeah. Tell us about your radio show a little bit. What, you know, how long have you been doing that?
Well, I started the website in 2004, and it's kind of become what it is over the years. It's become a life of its own, I guess, and... you know, it's just really like this idea to do what you guys are doing similarly, to basically just to speak with other people and, you know, get ideas and ponder about these things and try to have some knowledge gained within all that. And so, sometimes I interview people and sometimes I just babble on, I guess.
And, hey, and that's what we do. You're right. But no,
but yeah,
I think it's a good thing. I mean, this is like this once again. This is probably evolution. I mean, this is like how what the landscape has turned into with people going on these personal journeys, interviewing the individuals that are important to them. And then leaving it, and you know, at breadcrumbs, you know, on the internet or something.
Basically within my own travels, I'm trying to put it out there as I gain it too, you know, and hopefully I'll learn something in that travel, and at the same time, hopefully inspire other people through that.
Well, who was one of your favorite guests that you interviewed? How many interviews do you have?
I don't have that in front of me, but
over 100
a couple years.
Yeah, so
no. I've been doing the podcast since 2008, and I'm up to 95 right now.
So almost 100.
And I would say, yeah. That's a really hard question because it goes all over the place. Kind of like interested in people all over the place. My first interview was with Mike Hagan of Radio Orbit. He was like kind of one of the first podcaster radio shows that I started like really listening to. And, you know, he had a lot of interviews and a lot of the people are still out there. I think even Paul Levy, who's in the Sync Book too, he was interviewed by him. But, you know, a lot of people like Terrence McKenna and Dennis McKenna, and, you know, it gets into a lot of interviews with interesting people in that kind of way. So he was like my first interview. But I also like, you know, jumping around to different kind of mindsets, you know, and explore different avenues of thought that's out there. Because I'm not just interested in synchronicity.
Right.
And I'm not just interested in just monuments and, you know, all this
symbolic landscape
stuff. Yeah.
What is one? Are you a UFO hound?
I like UFOs. I think it's worth exploring. I saw one out in Olympia when I lived out there.
That's terribly interesting to me.
Now, Will, you've seen lights and things, yes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And then, so tell us about your experience in.
Who,
Olympia.
Me?
No. John.
Jeez, come on. No,
well,
so I think Will and I are like, this is why we're doing this together, probably, because we disagree about everything. But and I have not seen Bigfoot or any UFOs.
I think it has more to do with Freudian, the understanding that you're not sure about something. I mean, once you see a UFO, you're like, okay, that's not really aliens, but I don't know what the hell it was. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't see aliens, but I don't, like, hold it against. If I, like, hear somebody talk about aliens, like they were abducted, then I'm going to listen to them talk about being abducted.
Sure. No, that is interesting stuff, and I think we need to...
Well, it's an interesting story, what I saw.
Please, go on.
And, well, my roommate and I decided to eat some mushrooms. And
that's a perfect way
so
to start this.
So we're like having a good time, listening to music, and we go out onto the rooftop of this house, which was called the House of Doom in Olympia, and people might know about that if they still lived out there. It's no longer there anymore.
Wow.
But anyway, so my roommate and I were like, it's, middle of the night, and we're just talking, and then we're just talking, and we're both looking up in the sky, and we both see something at the same time, and it was a disc that came down below the clouds. It hovered a bit, you know, kind of over us, and it shot off, and it looked like a weird, strange, metallic, gunmetal look.
Wow.
And
it wasn't all cartoony.
Because,
you know, because the mushrooms will do that to you where everything looks kind of like a cartoon, so you're not sure what the hell you saw. But
we both... Go ahead.
No, I wasn't going to say anything. Come on, please.
Well, we both were like, what the hell was that? At the same time. And so we were kind of scared. We were like, whoa, let's go back inside, you know? But... You know, all these years later, I always thought about that, and I'm like, well, you know, there is a major, manufacturer right down the street called Boeing, and which they actually moved here, and now they're in Charleston, and I've talked to Boeing engineers, and they have technology that they're working on and are not telling about people. And so, like, I don't know, like, I didn't feel like it was alien. I felt that it was just weird, and I'd never seen it before, something like that before, you know. And I'm at the same time, I'm, like, going through this experience where I'm, like, you know, I'd never done mushrooms before that night. And,
well, that was your first trip?
That was my first trip.
Have you used psychedelics often since then?
I wouldn't say often.
You don't have to.
But I have.
This isn't a court of law.
I'm just asking. I mean, was it attractive to you?
Well, it's a curiosity with
it
with
has
the crowd
a lot to do
in.
With this. I mean, if you're well, this just goes if you're interested in UFOs or if you're interested in psychedelics are you interesting?
Or,
right.
Like, a lot of people
Freudian,
are more open because of
certain
frequent
things.
Ingestions. Yes, yes, yes.
Right. Well, I mean, I am interested in it in a bit as far as psychedelics and UFO phenomenon. And, you know, a lot of people down in South America, you know, they have many paintings where they have these kind of experiences, too, when they're on psychedelic experiences. And I actually think that I liked Terrence McKenna's take on it, where it's basically, you know, basically Mother Earth or nature trying to essentially make us understand that we are not in control, that nature is in control. And it's just kind of strange that a lot of times, all throughout history, you know, people, when they're having psychedelic experiences, they see these things. Now, I mean, could it be, like, perhaps there's some kind of cloaking device that these people have technology of, and for some reason, when you take these substances, that it pulls down those filters so that you can see beyond the cloaking?
The mushroom is UFO radar.
I there's a lot of mystery behind it, and I don't understand it. But I have talked to people who you know have been abducted and seen things, and there's a strange perspective all around that that I'm interested in understanding.
Very interesting. Let's skip over to another one of your interested subjects. I mean, other than UFOs, psychedelia, what else has happened on your show that you can think of?
Well, I mean, of course, there's, you know, politics and conspiracy and just trying to understand human nature in general. And I think a lot of the times that people demonize a lot of these subjects because they're afraid to look. And for some reason, I'm just not afraid to look. And so that opens up a lot of different rabbit holes. And when I try to come back from it all, it's truly just what all I can say is that, you know, life, this universe and everything is incredible and so vast. And I just cannot even, I don't feel like that I have the capacity to truly be able to put it in a nutshell to understand it. But my mind wants to. But I don't think I have that ability. I don't think anybody does. And so I think that some of this sharing knowledge and information is important, you know, especially during this time in evolution, you know, and to be able to correspond with people all around the planet and talk about all these subjects openly and honestly and humbly, you know, it will reveal something a lot greater than we can even imagine. And I don't know, so that's my interest in all this. And synchronicity is definitely a great part of that.
Well, that sounds like a reason to do a podcast, for sure. I do it for the chicks. 42-minute groupies, they are.
How's that working out for you?
How's that working out for
really
you?
Really good. Really good.
Liar. All right. So I am thoroughly impressed.
We have to ask you, probably just because of the proximity, what are your thoughts on, you know, time wave zero, the 0 point, whatever this thing is called, the 2012. December
are we 20th. Are we all in agreement that we're going to make it past the 21st?
Do you feel like we're going to be raptured out?
No.
Do you think
I've traveled down to Chichen Itza, and I've been to the pyramids, and I've talked to, like, people down there when I went down there back in 2005, And I had a strange experience down there as well, like, that basically essentially made me trapped in Mexico for a couple weeks. And, you know, just coming through that, understanding, you know, I have studied this 2012 stuff for, you know, since 2004, and right at this moment, I have no doubt that we will be okay on the other side of the 21st.
But do you think there'll be something that does happen? That, I mean, not...
Well...
So, like, we'll... What am I trying to say?
I think it's an opportunity.
There's the signified and the signifier, and, you know, sometimes we latch onto the concreteness of something, and so we want, like, a rapture out, but, you know, something still can happen.
Well, it seems like to me, let's say if the world was going to start crumbling and earthquaking and all this sort of stuff, wouldn't it be, you know, sort of resonating by now, like kind of starting up the engines, you know? If Nibiru is going to come smash into our planet, wouldn't we be seeing that right now? And I know that, like, a lot of people think chemtrails and whatnot are out there, you know, blocking that, but I don't grasp that. So what to me, what this time is an opportunity to just look at the specialness of the universe, of cycles, and how we're a part of these cycles, and looking at ourselves at this point in time, you know, and just being able to, like, reflect on that. And at the same time, it is cool to be able to, like, work out alignments and see what, you know, all these stars above us are doing within all of this, and how that kind of changes or what the effects of that is on the human mind. Because I do think that these things do have sort of kind of a effect on us, but it gets into topics of subtle energy, and, you know, to me, this is a great, you know, time to be alive, to experience.
It's been a great time talking with you, actually, and that is... Our 42 minutes for this week. You've been listening to 42 minutes from syncbook.com, and thanks, John Cale, for coming on. We enjoyed your syncbook piece.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
You bet. We'll have you again. Thank you, and good night.
Good night to you, too.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.